This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Now, heart disease is the number one cause of death in Australia, where in 2021, 10% of all deaths were because of coronary heart disease, and 25% of deaths were a result of cardiovascular disease. We all know the role that a good diet has in our lives, but when it comes to looking after your health, what are the things that we need to know when it comes to eating well? Well, here to tell us all about what we need to know about this is Dr. Evangeline Manzioris, Program Director of Nutrition and Food Sciences at the University of South Australia.
Health and wellness on Joy Drive.
Evangeline, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Very good. Now, we should note before we have this discussion that there are many causes and risk factors for heart disease, with diet just one of them, but an important one. And what we'll be talking about today is really about prevention. And if you've already got heart disease or are being treated for heart disease, you really need to follow the advice of your treating team. Also, if you have any concerns, please see your GP. I thought we'd just get that out there, Evangeline.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we can prevent it, and there's lots of things we can do in our diet. But if you do have something and you're being treated, it might be interesting to listen to, but listen to what your doctors and your treating team are telling you.
Now, before we talk about what we should be eating, let's get back to basics, because I think we often hear heart disease or risk factors to do with anything with our heart. Let's break it down. What is heart disease?
Right. So heart disease is when there's a problem with your actual heart itself. Okay. And we also call that coronary. So it just involves the heart, but the cardiovascular system involves your whole system. So that's the heart and the blood vessels. And it also includes strokes in the brain, because that's fundamentally a blood vessel system as well. So important to understand the difference. But what we do know is generally that the risk factors and the things we try to look in the diet are the same for both conditions.
Okay. And we've heard of the other thing, which we know is bad for our teeth, that's plaque buildup. But there's an issue also when it comes to plaque and our hearts.
Yeah. So look, plaque is what you find. Plaque is like a fatty, waxy substance, and it gradually builds up in your arteries. And the problem is the arteries that are within your heart that allow the oxygen to be supplied to the heart muscle, it's when these arteries get blocked up by the plaque, and they continue to get really, really narrow. So at one point, they don't even allow blood to be flowed through. And if you don't get blood flowing through your heart, that part of the heart muscle will die. And that's when you get that heart attack. You can also have problems when the plaque is disrupted, and it's what we call unstable. And when the blood goes past it, it tries to heal it. And in the process of healing it, it causes a blockage then as well. So there's two sorts of ways that you can get blockages in your heart.
Okay. Now, before we go into diet, let's just tackle the other thing, the risk factors for heart disease. What are they?
The ones you can't control, which you've already talked about, is a family history of heart disease.
Yep.
And even if you can't control it, you can still do things in your diet and get treatment from your doctors to try to reduce your risk as much as you can. And that will mean lifestyle modifications like diet and exercise, and also potentially medications. And that's what you need to talk to your doctor about. The other thing is gender. We know that men are at a higher risk of getting heart disease. But also with women, once they reach menopause, their risk of heart disease also increases. So they're the ones we can't control. The ones that we can control are the ones that we can focus on, and you can actually do a lot. So it's things like your body weight, which is related to what you're eating, of course, cholesterol levels, do you have diabetes and how well are you managing it? Exercise is really important, your blood pressure. And also, interestingly, social isolation. So the more you're connected with people, you know, in your local communities, the better off you're going to be as well.
And that's one thing we don't hear often enough, because we take it for granted that we've got to control the things like our weight, blood pressure, our diet, and look at all the other overlaying factors, whether you've got diabetes and that management of that. But social isolation is a big one. That's getting more and more attention.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also important for a whole lot of other diseases as well. So your cognitive ability, also mental health. So, you know, get out there, go and have a coffee at the coffee shop, chat to people, join clubs, you know, all that sort of stuff, which gets you connected with people in your community is really important. And if you can walk there and use active transport to get to those, it's even better, isn't it?
No, I love that. It's a win-win because you get that social connection, but also you get to do the exercise that we know how important it is for looking after ourselves. Now, one of the things that we really want to tackle is about looking at our diet and what do we need to look out for. So let's, where do we start with that?
Oh, gosh, it's a tricky one, isn't
it? I know, there's a lot to unpack. And I thought, okay, so let's not rush through it, but let's just sort of hit all the key points and share some ideas of what we can do and things to look out for. So,
okay. So the big one is the fats in your diet. Which ones should you have and which ones shouldn't you have?
Yes.
And generally, what we say is saturated fats are the ones that you need to try and avoid as much as you can. And these are the fats that are generally solid at room temperature. So that includes all the animal products, you know, like butter, coconut oil, which isn't an animal product, but coconut oil is high in saturated fats, lard and dripping. The fat you see on your piece of meat is also going to be problematic, and also palm oil. And then all the foods that may contain them, like your processed foods, like pastries and biscuits and pasties and pies and sausage rolls and all those sorts of things. So try to reduce your animal fat as much as you can. And this is probably in line with stuff that we've talked about earlier about having mainly a plant-based diet, because if you're having a mainly plant-based diet, you're going to be limiting your saturated fat intake. And the two foods that most people ask most questions about is, should I have full-fat dairy and can I have eggs? And the National Heart Foundation has just recently recommended that if you don't have any of the risk factors for heart disease, then having full-fat dairy is okay. But if you do have elevated blood lipids, like elevated cholesterol level, you probably need to go to the low-fat dairy products. The next one is with eggs. Once again, if you don't have any risk factors for heart disease, so you don't have elevated blood fats like cholesterol and triglyceride, you can have as many eggs as you like, within reason.
Yeah.
I always say something you wouldn't be embarrassed to tell people is probably a good amount to have.
Because but if you because there was a time that we used to hear eggs are really bad for you, and it seemed to be banned from anybody who wanted to sort of keep any sort of normal levels of cholesterol, even though they hadn't checked it. And the same goes with obviously full-fat dairy.
And the thought about the eggs was, because we know eggs have cholesterol in them, and so there was this assumption that if you ate cholesterol, it would make your cholesterol levels worse. But if you eat cholesterol, your body makes less cholesterol in the body. So it seems to balance out a bit. But once again, if you've got high cholesterol, it's something you probably need to limit to about one egg a day. So they're the two big fats of problems. We also often talk about trans fats.
Yes.
But luckily in Australia, the food industry has been regulated and they've been made to reduce the level of trans fat they use in cooking. So it's not a big problem, but if you eat a lot of pastries and baked goods, you might find that your trans fat is higher than other people.
Now, I'm going to ask, I'm going to put it out there, because one thing that we used to hear a lot about at a certain time was about polyunsaturated spreads, how they're better for you. And then the debate came, well, not really. Maybe butter is than polyunsaturated. Yeah. So where's the jury on that one?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And what I would say is, look, we do know that mono and polyunsaturated fats are better for heart disease, but I also recognise that butter for some people is really enjoyable and they like it with certain foods. So if you don't have any risk factors for heart disease, you can have butter along with a mixture of other types of oils and mainly focusing on those monos and polys. And so what I say to people is, look, save the butter for where it makes a difference in the food you enjoy. So if you love having, butter and jam on your toast, then reserve it for that, but don't have it all the time. And I think that's probably going to be a good balance. Until we get more evidence about, the risk of butter versus margarines. If you're having bacon and you want butter on your toast with it, it's that sort of thing. The bacon there is probably more of a problem than the butter. But, yes, try to get a balance and also have the healthy monounsaturated fats. And we often talk about olive oil.
Yes.
And that's particularly good because it's got a lot of antioxidants in it. And so the antioxidants can also help reduce your risk of heart disease. But these oils are getting expensive. So Once again, you might want to save the extra virgin olive oil for cold food application like salads and enjoy it that way, and maybe use another polyunsaturated oil in your cooking. So, you know, it depends on what you can afford at the time.
Tell me, what are the other polyunsaturated oils that you can use for cooking? Because I'm coming from a very Mediterranean background. Olive oil used to be used for everything. Rarely did we have butter. But like you had highlighted just a moment ago, it is getting expensive. I used to be able to get the big 4-litre can that I will then decant into bottles, and it used to be X amount a few years ago, and now it's gone more than triple the cost.
Yes.
So I've now had to think, and look, the
evidence is sort of suggesting that olive oil is going to continue to go up in price, primarily because yields of olives are low due to the climatic changes that are happening in Europe where they're growing it. So it is a concern. But, you know, canola oil is mainly a monounsaturated fat, and that can also be used for cooking. There's also avocado oil, which is probably still quite expensive, and things like macadamia oil. Peanut oil can also be useful. There's two types of peanut oil. If people look at the label carefully, they'll see that there's one particular one that seems to be higher in monounsaturated fats than another. So just reading the labels more carefully and picking the one that's higher in the monounsaturated fats is going to be good.
Okay. We're chatting with Dr. Evangeline Manzioris, Program Director of Nutrition and Food Sciences at the University of South Australia, about heart health and nutrition. Now, let's moving on to how we can still look after our blood pressure and salt intake.
Yeah, look, this is a big one. There's increasing research coming out showing that salt is a big risk factor for having high blood pressure, getting stroke, and also for death. The fortunate thing is that most of the salt in our diet, about 70% of it, comes from ultra-processed foods that we're consuming and processed foods. So if you can cut out those fast foods, foods that come packaged in lots of plastic, you know, like 2-minute noodles, even some sweet foods have a lot of salt in them, the better off you're going to be. So, you know, going back to basics, trying to cook your own food, because the amount of salt we put in our cooking only represents about 20% of our overall salt intake. And 10% of our salt intake is what we find in food naturally. So most of it comes from processed foods. And I guess the overlay here is that processed foods also tend to be high in fat and high in sugar. So you're sort of doing the triple whammy of really improving your health by reducing your intake of processed and ultra-processed foods as much as you can.
Okay, because it is that hidden thing that we don't sort of see, whether it's the fats or the salts that add it to the foods that we sort of get that are prepackaged. Now, reducing your heart disease through healthy eating, what are some of the tips that you could sort of suggest to us? Because I know anything from fruit and vegetables have got fibre in them, fish and so on. What are the things?
The big thing is we know that eating more fish in your diet can help reduce the risk of heart disease. And what's interesting is that most of the benefits come from eating whole fish and not from using fish oil supplements. So eating fish, once again, fish is expensive, but you can get canned fish, which is a lot cheaper, tuna, salmon, which still contain those really healthy omega-3 fats in them. But try to avoid the ones that are canned in, oils. Get the ones that are either in water or in brine, or they might be, you know, those flavours that you sometimes get, like savoury tomato and onion and lemon and pepper and all that sort of stuff. And also omega-3 fats are also really going to be good for your brain health and also help your joints. So that's a really good food to try and include. And we would recommend about 2 to 3 times a week. The oilier the fish, the better. And you can generally pick the oilier fish because they smell more fishy. It's the fats that make the fish smell fishy.
Love that. What are the other things that food-wise we could sort of include more of our diet that would help?
Yeah, look, whole grains. So trying to have, you know, the most high fiber foods, trying to get brown rice into your diet, wholemeal pasta, wholemeal multigrain bread is really good. Trying different seeds and nuts and all that sort of stuff, legumes, beans, lentils, all of those are going to be really good for building up your fiber level. We know that fiber is good for also reducing colon cancer, but it also, remember, it also helps to feed your microbiome. And the healthier your microbiome, once again, that's linked to heart disease, the better off you're going to be.
That's good.
And the other big group, of course, is fruit and vegetables. They also, like whole grains, provide a lot of fiber, but they also provide antioxidants. Each of those colours you see in your fruit and vegetables represent different antioxidants, and they all offer protection against heart disease. So have as much as you can and as much variety as you can as well. And I guess if we're talking about fruit and veg and lentils, we're talking about meat. What do you do about meat?
Yeah.
We've talked about fish. Thing is, try to reduce your intake of fatty red meats as much as you can. And the more white meat you can introduce, the better, including fish. And then also trying to replace some of those meat meals that you have with beans and lentils as well. And look, you know, some beans and lentils and chickpeas just go great in casseroles and curries as well. So, you know, try to think outside the circle a bit about, you know, replacing the meat.
Now, before we move off from food, another thing that surprises me, tea is getting a bit of prominence about the impact it can have on fatty deposits in the arteries. What's that all about?
Yeah, so look, tea's great. It's a plant product, obviously.
Yep.
It's got a lot of antioxidants in it. It's got some anti-inflammatory behaviour, and all of that helps to increase blood flow, helps to reduce plaques, also helps you cognitively
yep.
to be less depression and better mental health. So all of that's important. So, you know, vary what you drink, have mm-hmm. some tea. Try to reduce the sugar in it. That might be hard for some.
Yep.
But yeah, look, tea's going to be great. And particularly as we're going into the winter months, you know, we need something warm to drink.
Okay.
That's going to be really good. And the other thing is, this is coming into our Mediterranean background,
yes.
Con, is the garlic.
That's it. You read my mind. I was just going to say, there is olive oil. We've talked about the Mediterranean diet, but garlic is the other thing. And what's the good in that sort of helps us with our heart health?
Yeah, look, there's a compound in there called allicin,
yep.
and that helps to reduce your blood pressure. It makes your blood vessels dilate, which helps blood pressure. And if you help your blood pressure, you're also reducing your risk of heart disease. Also helps to lower the cholesterol levels in your body. So, you know, get into that tzatziki, you know, add garlic into your recipes as much as you can.
Yep.
Adds a whole lot of flavour to it, and is also really beneficial. So we've talked about all the things to include, you know, and there's just a few things to think about excluding. We've talked about limiting fast food and processed meats. Processed foods as well. Trimming the fat off your red meat as much as you can and getting that skin off the poultry, but also alcohol.
Okay.
The recommendation is now not to drink more than 2 drinks a day. A lot of people say, oh, but red wine's good for your heart. And that's a bit of a murky area in the research. So, you know, the best thing you can say is if you're going to have alcohol, red wine would probably be the best thing to do, but don't start drinking red wine because you think it's going to help you. You're better off not having it probably, and no more than 2 standard drinks on any one day. And trying to have 2 alcohol-free days every week is, you know, going to be good.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is Australia's recommendations for alcohol are a little bit higher than other countries who've reviewed their alcohol guidelines and suggested even lower intakes. So,
okay.
And, you know, and at the moment we've got a great range of no alcohol beer and wine on the market. So people can start exploring some of those and see how they enjoy those.
I love that. You've broken it down really well because it is a complex subject. When we hear about heart disease, what is it that we need to look after? What is it that we need to avoid? But what are the things that we can include in our diet and maybe lifestyle factors too? And you've managed to summarize in a way that sort of makes it easy. And I think that's important because if we complicate it, people then sort of veer away from paying attention to what they need to look after and how they do it. So
yeah,
it's all common, and it's all common sense things. I know sometimes we're aware of it and we sort of roll our eyes, but sometimes it's just good to just put it out there and just go, okay, this is what we need to do. So
yeah. And look, just making one change a week is going to be a benefit. It's difficult to do it all at once.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, if people start off with one thing, it would be reduce your intake of processed and ultra-processed foods.
Love it, Evangeline. Really appreciate the time you've taken putting this together. And always, as always, it's really informative. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure. Have a good afternoon.
You too. That's Dr. Evangeline Manzioris, Program Director of Nutrition and Food Sciences at the University of South Australia. And Evangeline is also an accredited practicing dietitian and sports dietitian.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.